On the campaign trail, Mitt Romney has talked about his career at Bain College, Capital, and how they turned around businesses that had unrealized potential for growth. But that wasn't all the firm was doing while Mr. Romney was at the helm. Joining me now for today's second backstory is Jesse Eisinger. He's a senior reporter for ProPublica, where he covers Wall Street and finance, and he also writes for the Deal Book column in the New York Times. We have a link to his story, Finder Weepers, Early Bain Disputes Cast New Light on Its Business, on our show page. I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show today. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having me back, Leonard.
You open with the story of the consumer credit information business Experian. Was it unusual that Bain bought the company and then sold it for a $500 million profit in 1996?
It was very unusual because the turnaround from purchase, the close of the purchase to the sale was 7 weeks, which was quite stunning.
That's like flipping a house, isn't it?
I mean, it's if anybody could flip a house in 7 weeks, they would love to do it. You can't do a house that you could barely do a stock. It was a spectacular gain. And one of the things that put Bain on the map. Bain had been around for almost a decade or so, but this is the kind of deal that really made their name. And they sold it to a British retailer. So it was a spectacular win for them. And it belies the idea that they were doing much of turning around. You can't really turn around a company in 7 weeks, Dave. So this is the kind of deal that really was sort of unusual for private equity, a different kind of deal than the thing that they've been pitching or that their image was.
The Wall Street Journal called it one of the quickest big hits in Wall Street history. Now, this is before 1999 when Mitt Romney says he left the company. So he was running Bain at the time?
Yes, he was running Bain at the time. He wasn't the lead partner on the Experian deal, but he had his hand in everything. People say that Romney really was a very kept an eye close on all the details. So this is the kind of thing that he would have been intimately involved with.
Now, how did Bain find out that Experian might even be a good investment?
Well, there are two stories. The one story, and there was a legal dispute about it, is that kind of broker or finder brought the idea to Bain. And Bain had teamed up with some other private equity firms, including Tom Sage Lee, and that he brought this deal to them. It was an L.A.-based finders firm, guy named Jim Springer, and he said that he brought the deal to them and that Bain reneged on paying him his finder's fee, and there was a legal dispute about it. He eventually sued, and then there was a settlement. Now, Bain said that they'd gotten the idea elsewhere.
And actually, both sides sued each other, but Bain wound up paying Jim Springer?
Yes, and that settlement hasn't been disclosed, so we don't know about it, but people familiar with the situation told me that it was very acceptable to Springer. There was this lawsuit, and it went on for a little while, and then they settled. And finders disputes and lawsuits are quite common. You can make a settlement to make something go away, or you can make a settlement when somebody caught you out and you reneged on your purchase. You reneged on your obligation. It's a little ambiguous.
We've heard a lot from the Romney campaign about the candidate's work at Bain, turning around companies like Staples and Sports Authority. Were these kinds of deals also a major part of the company's activities?
Yeah. So what people told me about Bain in the early years in the 90s was that it wasn't really a company that was aiming to turn around companies. It wasn't a firm that was specializing in that. It was specializing in a different kind of private equity deal where you take mature companies, companies that are profitable, that have enough cash flow, that you can then use the private equity model of layering on an enormous amount of debt to the company and making huge returns because you've only put in a little bit of money. Your equity investment is relatively small.
Well, that's like a leveraged buyout, isn't it?
at the classic leverage buyout. It's the definition of it, and Bain was specializing in this. And so what it really does is it kind of undermines this idea that they were doing turnarounds, and you know that he's a turnaround specialist. It doesn't take much turnaround expertise to take a mature, solidly profitable company and put a lot of debt onto it. In fact, it makes the company much riskier, but it doesn't take a lot of expertise.
So what happened to these companies? Did they end up becoming profitable after Bain bought them? Go ahead.
It has a very mixed record of that. The Wall Street Journal did an investigation and found that over a fifth, 22% of the companies went bankrupt in the years after Bain took it over. Subsequently, even after that period, a lot of companies went bankrupt. So Bain did not have a record of creating stalwart American icons. What they did do often, most of the time, even in many times, even in the cases where there were bankruptcies, is make money, profit on the deal. So Bain could have a winner even when the company went bankrupt.
There were three other cases that you found where Bain ended up in court over finder's fees. Were they all similar to the case of Experian and James McCall Springer?
Yes. So this looked like something of a pattern. They had four of these cases, it appears like they settled all of the cases. So we don't really know what the circumstances were. Three of them had almost exactly the same kind of allegations. A finder broker's firm brought an idea to Bain. They signed agreements with each other, exclusivity agreements, and then subsequently Bain ended up doing the purchase and reneging on the contract, according to the allegations. The fourth was slightly different.
But then Bain had to settle all of them.
Bain had to settle all of them, as I say, these are common disputes, but they shed light on a couple of things. They shed light on the idea that Bain wasn't managing to find companies on its own. They were getting ideas from other people. And then Bain wasn't one of the guys who I spoke to, who was one of these finders, said, Bain told us we want profitable companies. We're not. And he said, you know, I knew guys. I took companies to guys who did turnarounds. These weren't. This wasn't a turnaround firm. This is not what Bain was looking for.
You point out that since these were private transactions, there isn't much financial data on these deals. So how were you able to find out much about them?
Well, there were a lot of legal filings on these particular disputes that have you have to go to the local courts to get them. They're sort of almost lost to the mists of time, but not quite. And then there are certain firms that track private company financial data, like Dun & Bradstreet. And so ProPublica, my very able research head of research here, Liz Day, looked up a bunch of companies and found out what their sales were. So we get a sense of these kind of things. Now, you don't have a full SEC filings on these private companies, but you get a sense that they were, many of them were profitable and mature. Duane Reade was one of these companies. That was a perfectly healthy company that could handle a lot of debt from an LBO or from a leveraged buyout. And when you put a lot of debt on a company, you're making it much more fragile.
Jesse,
so the essentials. Oh, sure.
We have just a moment left, but has the Bain, the Romney campaign responded to the story?
Well, they've said that they told me that they have always said that they did a variety of deals, but they've emphasized their startups and their turnarounds. And Romney himself titled a memoir of his years, early years in the Salt Lake City Olympics as turnaround. So this is clearly what he has emphasized. And, you know, it's not really the case. They weren't turnaround artists as much as leverage artists.
And during the Democratic National Convention, three people who worked at companies that were bought by Bain spoke about how those sales had translated into jobs losses. We likely to hear more about these kinds of deals, although, as it turns out, one of the claims at the DNC was more than just a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, I think what we're having now is a national debate about the social utility of private equity. And what the Romney campaign wants to argue is that these guys are very useful, that they've made American companies leaner and more competitive. And the opposite argument is that they've taken healthy companies and made them much more fragile and vulnerable to anything going wrong, because instead of having a rainy day fund, they've got a lot of debt that they have to repay.
Jesse Eisinger, ProPublica, his article, Finders, Weepers, Early Bain Disputes, cast new light on its business. You can find a link to it on our show page. Thank you so much, Jesse. On tomorrow's show, we'll look at the complicated role China has played in world affairs over the last 250 years, and then we'll explore the latest on the New York art season with critics Roberta Smith and Christian Viveros Fawn. Also, Molly Ringwald on her first novel, When It Happens to You. Plus, our latest Please Explain is about what organic food labels mean. The Leonard LePage Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan's the executive producer. And we had help today from Nicole Lebo and contributing producers Virginia Doris, Fran Jacobs, and Christina Maldonado. Debbie Fountain was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard LePage, your host. Thanks for listening, and we will see you tomorrow.